So I just want to say thank you all for being here, and it's a real pleasure to be part of this competition. I'm going to the opposite end of the spectrum. We get 120 inches of rain on average in Hilo, which is not part of my talk, but just seeing how dry it was, we're definitely in a contrasting situation where I'm located. So my position title is officially the Assistant Researcher for Sustainable Farming Systems with an emphasis in tropical fruit and nut production. I think that with new faculty positions, they try and get us to do as much as possible. So my job title kind of tells you, similarly to Scott, I pretty much do everything as long as it's an edible fruit or nut, technically. So my position is with the University of Hawaii at Manoa, but also like Scott, I'm based at one of our research and extension centers in Hilo on the Big Island of Hawaii, and I'm in the Tropical Plant Soil Sciences Department, which is a merged department between horticulture and soil science. So just to give you an idea about what the agricultural industry looks like in Hawaii, for those of you who are not familiar with it, we are pretty much mostly based on specialty crops. And you'll notice from this figure from 2015 that a lot of the tropical fruits and nuts fall into that category and make up most of the acreage of production in the state. This figure is from 2015, and you'll notice the big purplish chunk is made up of sugar, and that was representing one large sugar plantation on Maui, which has since gone out of business for sugar, and now they're diversifying. So they actually have plans to put in a large acreage of macadamia, coffee, avocado, and citrus. So it's really exciting for me because this is the first expansion of tropical fruits and nuts in the state in quite a long time. You'll notice that some of the other major acreage is made up of macadamia, coffee, there's also papaya, mixed tropical fruits, and diversified systems as well. In terms of economic value, the tropical fruits and nuts are also really important for our agricultural economy in Hawaii. So coffee and macadamia are by far the two most important. They usually average around $50 million. However, last year we had a lower than normal reported for macadamia, which we're partially attributing to the eruption of Kilauea, heavy rainfall events, including a hurricane, as well as the potential for one or two producers that didn't report, which can really skew our ag statistics in Hawaii. But you will notice that the acreage is much more significant for macadamia than it is for coffee, so that there's a really high value on a per acre basis for coffee in Hawaii, which many of you are probably familiar with. One thing that I like to emphasize with Hawaii production is that although these dollar values may seem low, what they do tie into is our largest GDP, which is tourism in Hawaii. So a lot of people who come to Hawaii, or if you've ever been to Hawaii before, everybody comes and wants to take home things for their family and friends. They usually take back chocolate-covered macadamia nuts, usually one of the favorites, coffee, and also these become our future consumers of Hawaii-grown products. So they go home and they continue to buy macadamia nuts, or they continue to look for that Hawaii-grown product in their local marketplace. So I always say that although these are low farm gate value prices compared to our statewide economy, they really tie into that multi-billion dollar industry of tourism. So my position, like many others who presented before me, is quite challenging in a lot of ways, but it also gives me a lot of opportunities. One of those is that I have a three-way split appointment. So I'm a 60% research, 30% extension, 10% teaching, which really allows me the opportunity to strengthen my program across all three areas of land grant mission. And as I go through my presentation, it's really hard to do all of this in 20 minutes, but really all of these are fully integrated. Especially being on one of the research and extension centers, I work very closely with our stakeholders and clientele, and so all of my programs really are driven both by the stakeholders, and they really help drive my research program. Some principles that I like to carry forward with developing my program have been sustainability and diversity. So sustainability is a very commonly thrown around word, it's part of my job title. But really what it means to me is incorporating multiple disciplines and using broad teams to address problems in a holistic and systems-based approach. And in terms of diversity, I mean that from all different angles, including approaches to problems, methods of information and delivery, as well as diversity in demographics of my stakeholders, clientele, and also my students. And I'll try to elaborate on that a little bit. When I first came into my position, it was also vacant for quite a while, so I had similar opportunities to Scott and challenges to coming up with my own program. The first things that came to the way that I approached this was by focusing on existing crops and new and emerging crops. So two examples of that are macadamia and cacao. So macadamia being the existing well-established crop, and cacao being a potential new emerging crop. And I have listed here the diversity of the types of projects that I work on under these specific crops, including things from orchard establishment, dealing with aging orchards and soil health, looking at post-harvest processing issues. And I also do this in a variety of other crops as well, but just to give you an idea of the diversity of projects that I work on. And this is really to address one of my core competencies of my position description, which is to provide leadership for a collaborative interdepartmental program on integrated sustainable tropical fruit and nut systems. So really my position is a team-based position. I'm meant to be there to create these teams to address problems in a holistic way and look at the orchard crops not only from one specific angle, but trying to look at them in a holistic manner. And I can't do this by myself. Like everyone else said, this is really a team effort. This is just some pictures of people that are in my lab that I've had there in the past couple years. And I also just wanted to emphasize that I also work very closely with our extension faculty, our extension agents. I also work very closely with USDA ARS. We're very lucky in that they're located physically right across the street from us, which is a great resource in terms of partnerships and collaborations. And I also work very closely with the Department of Agriculture and other faculty throughout the university, both within the college and outside. So my approach to this presentation was to just try and pick one thing to talk about. So I'm going to talk about macadamia and one specific problem within this and how I approached it, and that gives you an idea of what I've done more broadly for my program. So as I already mentioned, macadamia is a very important crop both in terms of acreage in the state and also of economic value. The biggest problem that we have in macadamia right now is the Macadamia felticoxid. This is an invasive scale insect from Australia. It first populates the main trunk of the tree and then moves to the outer branches. You'll notice the branch dieback that's occurring. That's usually when the grower calls me up and says, what's going on in my farm? And I tell them what it is. And by this point, the levels are really high. That means their infestation level has gotten to a point that you're starting to see the tree declining. It's very hard to see visually until it starts to appear on the husks and the leaves. And by that point, again, it's that heavy levels of infestation. So visually, it's hard to scout for. Another reason why this pest is a bit more challenging for our growers is because it doesn't cause any quality damage to the macadamia. So all of the insect pests that we had previously cause quality damage, which when they go to the processor to sell, they're notified of what that quality damage is, and they have a better idea of what's causing the problem. With MFC, you don't get that. You have a general yield decline. And growers, unless they're being really, really careful about their record keeping, are probably not noticing it because this pest does occur in hot spots through the field. So if they're harvesting from one block and they have one little area that's got a hot spot, it might be underreported because of the averaging that's occurring over the whole harvest block. So when I came in 2015 into my position, this pest had been around for about 10 years, but only about 6 years had it been causing some serious problems in the orchards. And so I got together with a group of researchers to try and address this issue. So one of the projects that we came up with was an applied project on canopy management. So as you can see as you probably noticed in the previous picture, macadamia is very large. The canopies are overlapping, they're huge. Prior to this pest, growers were not doing any type of foliar application. So canopy management was not part of their issues that they had to deal with. So we were looking at, could we just open up that canopy and what will that do to the MFC populations, as well as what will it do to other factors within that system? We also looked at soil and moisture in these systems too, but what I just want to point out with the pruning was that we were able to see a decrease in the MFC populations just by pruning and opening up the canopy. We also saw an increase in weed biomass and flowering plants, which actually led to an increase of natural enemy populations. We saw an increased amount of predation and parasitism in the pruned versus unpruned plots. Now, that's really great news, but it also is not effective control. It just means that we have an increase in those populations, but it by no means was a way for it to actually provide effective control with those natural enemies. Most importantly, from my perspective, was that yields were not different between our pruned and unpruned plots, and this was a project we had over 2 years, two different varieties in three locations. We actually I just got a specialty crop block grant program to do some further investigation into this management practice. Specifically, I'm interested in how does this affect the weed management protocols in these fields, because macadamia is harvested from the orchard floor, so weed management is really important in these systems. And also, how does it affect the efficacy and the applications of insecticides for controlling MFC, which is the current commercial standard? I'm hoping that by opening up the canopy, growers are going to get better spray coverage, more effective control, and they can reduce their applications of insecticides in these systems. Another project that I was part of, and we're just right now in the process of writing up this manuscript, is looking at the economic injury level of the macadamia felted coccid. So really giving growers specific tools about when they should consider applying insecticides or taking some type of control measure. This study was done over 2 years and two varieties. So the 344 variety is in the blue and orange. The 508 is in the gray and yellow, and the years 1 and 2 respectively. What you might first notice, and on the x-axis is the level of infestation of the macadamia felted coccid, and on the y-axis is the yield. And the first thing that may come to your attention is the 508 is just generally a better performer than the 344. The 344 is an older variety, and it tends to go down as it ages, and these orchards by now are quite old. Another thing that you'll notice is that the only place where we saw significant yield effects was in the 344 variety, and that was in both the medium and high levels of infestation in years 1 and 2. This is both supported with our data and also anecdotally. We have these fields right next to each other, and you'll see trees in rows bordering each other where the 344s are full of MFC and the 508s are not. So we're definitely seeing a varietal-based resistance, which is really important for our growers to know and where to scout. And although these yields were not significantly different at the 508s or even in the low levels of infestation in 344, I believe that these are going to translate into economic yield losses for our growers and that it will encourage them to do more scouting and take control over these hotspots in their field, because I think it's important for them to know, based on our data, exactly what's happening in the field, because right now they just don't know that there's a yield decline occurring. It's being a little bit covered up by their reporting that they're getting from their processors. Another project that we had going on, this is something that one of our postdocs was working on, and it was to look at new insecticidal products. As many of you who work in specialty crops know, it's really hard to find products that are approved for use, and that's especially true in Hawaii because we have an additional layer of local pesticide regulations. So this product is a different active ingredient than what we currently have listed. Another reason why we chose it was because macadamia is already on the label and it's already approved for use in Hawaii. Basically, what we took home from this trial was that Sequoia is effective compared to no application, but it's not as effective as Esteem, which is the current commercial standard for controlling macadamia felted coccid in Hawaii. And you might have noticed from the previous slides that those low levels of MFC that are still occurring under Sequoia may end up being an economic loss for the grower. However, this does provide them with another tool in their toolbox that will help them in preventing resistance buildup in the macadamia felted coccid populations, because right now they're currently just using Esteem pretty much exclusively. Another reason that we are excited to have this product as an option is that the pre-harvest interval is short. It's only 7 days. The other products are 30 or 60 days, and it's a little more challenging for our growers to get in there and do effective applications. In terms of outputs, we do kind of your typical extension types of outputs, field days, field visits, hands-on workshops. We work very closely with the industry in this situation. So this is an example of a series of workshops we have coming up right now that was funded by the Department of Agriculture and the Hawaii Department of Ag to provide IPM programming specifically for our smaller macadamia growers, and we're doing this by kind of reaching out to them locally throughout the county and the main production areas. We also do, of course, your traditional peer-reviewed publications, extension publications that are based online and free for our growers and stakeholders. And I also write with one of our extension agents who works in macadamia, the monthly macadamia task list and a macadamia task list in the Pacific Nut Producer magazine, which is a trade magazine. It's hard to stay on top of those deadlines for those of you that do trade stuff. This is another area that is kind of, again, outside of what I probably would have ever thought I would be doing, which is advocating for the introduction of a biocontrol agent. This is a parasitoid that's very specific to the macadamia felted coccid, and we're working right now to get it introduced from Australia. It's very, very difficult, and basically my role in this is to just act as an advocate for the industry and help to push it forward, and also to help our industry understand the science behind what's going on and what's going into this process of getting it brought into the state. Funding, of course, we can't do anything without money, so I've been lucky to be part of teams that have put together successful funding for these programs, and I have to say that the smallest amount of money that we got from the Western IPM Center has been our best PR opportunity, because we've been featured in with different articles through NEFA. For example, we just got listed as one of the main impacts on their annual report. So this is just a really great opportunity. You have no idea when you're going to get that kind of like breakthrough with PR-wise, and it's been a great opportunity for us to get the word out there about this pest, about this, the projects that we've been doing around it, and how important it is for our agricultural industry in Hawaii. Now, the only part that doesn't really fit into this is like more traditional instruction. My graduate students are very much integrated into all of my research and outreach programming. We really do it on a team-based approach, so everyone helps with each other's projects and programs. They help me with my outreach events and development of those content. I am responsible for online teaching because my position is based on the Big Island, and the difficulty of getting to campus is including a $220 round-trip ticket, which we can't afford to spend for me to get to campus to teach. So all of my courses that I teach are online. The main course that I teach is an undergraduate upper division course about tropical fruit production. And just to give you an idea of how I ran that, I have asynchronous instruction. So I create online modules, 10 to 15 minute, 5 to 10 minute videos that they can watch at any time that go along with reading assignments for them to do. And then we come together with synchronous sessions to do journal club-based discussions, so we still get that face-to-face time and interaction with the students. Another kind of exciting new thing that wasn't around when I was in school, at least I don't think, is Wikipedia Education Foundation. They have a really great tool that you can incorporate into your classroom to help students learn about Wikipedia, and they can become editors. And part of their assignment is to actually edit and make significant contributions to a Wikipedia page. And it's been a fascinating, eye-opening experience both for my students and myself, because like many of us, when you Google, it's typically the first page that pops up. And so it's a really wonderful opportunity for us to contribute to non-biased, science-based information for the public. And it helps students think more critically about their sources and their preconceived notions about different sources that they're looking at. One of the, I think, most exciting things about teaching online, it's not my most favorite thing to do. I really like to be face-to-face, but the opportunity to reach non-traditional students is there. This photo on the right is a picture of our field trip that we do. It's an optional field trip. I have been able to get funding to bring the students over to the Big Island for spring break, and they get the opportunity to go visit farms. We do hands-on workshops and activities. And one of my students, Alex, was pregnant and gave birth during the semester in which I was teaching. And she not only was one of my best students, but she also asked if she could come and bring her daughter with her on the field trip. And I was more than happy to make the accommodation so that she could participate fully in that opportunity. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for us to reach non-traditional students using online teaching and distance education. I will stop by saying thank you. I have so many people, funders, students, colleagues that I tried to put on this page, and it just got really crowded and busy. So I'll just say thank you to everyone who's helped me build my program in the past 4 years. And something that I don't put on my dossier and isn't a line item, but I've also become a mother to two kids in the past 4 years, which has added a whole nother level of understanding what multitasking means and doing things without sleep. So yes, with that, I'll say thank you and take any questions if we have time.
You have time for questions.
In your pie chart, you had seed production. Where is that located?
That is mainly located on Kauai and Oahu. Yeah, that's the seed nurseries. Yes.
What technology platform do you use for your synchronous?
Yes, so I forgot to repeat the previous question. This question is, what do I use for my synchronous sessions? I use Zoom.